I have levels on everyone.
Hooray! We leveled up. Ding.
Atheist Nomads, episode 160. News for August 18, 2016.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
We do love hoo-haws.
Hoo-haws and Pokemon.
Yeah!
We are the Atheist Nomads, bringing you history, science, politics, religion, and interviews with leaders in the atheist community. Not all those who wander are lost. Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. I am Dustin. Joining me as always is Wesley.
Hi.
No.
Is that all you got?
No! Go back! Redo! Fuck it, we'll do it live!
Hello, everybody. How you doing?
Aw.
That just totally threw me off. Okay, so, and also joining us is my lovely wife, Lauren.
Hello, Yay. Everybody.
Fuck you both.
Hey, what's up?
Anyway.
So how are you guys doing?
Shitty, so I'll just say lovely and get it over with. Work sucks and love you all. Thank you.
Work sucks, then you die.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's not how that goes.
Everybody out there in the show lands listening, you make it worthwhile, so thank you for that.
Aww.
Aww.
And Lauren?
I am doing great.
Yay. I'm doing well, too. I am drinking Wibbly Man smoked scotch ale.
Is it Wibbly or Wobbly?
It must be Wibbly, because no. I know of Wobbly hops.
It's Wobbly.
Oh.
Or okay. Whoa, Billy. It's Wobbly.
Whoa, yeah. Billy.
From the McCall Brewing Company out of McCall, Idaho. One of the first three places in the state to get gigabit internet.
Stop reminding me.
Which pisses me off. They're out in the middle of the mountains.
It's a resort town.
They do not deserve gigabit. And Boise doesn't get it until the end of the year.
Haha.
And well, Idaho Falls and Pocatello gets it before Boise? What the fuck?
Well, they're kind of in...
Well, they're rolling out to smaller areas first.
Yeah,
because
their internet has sucked for so long.
Since we last did a news episode, I've done two family reunions, one with Lauren's very Mormon family.
Woo! Well,
holy shit.
Much of it's very Mormon. And then this past weekend was with the very Adventist portion of my extended family.
Woo!
And then the last morning, right before we left, there ended up being a conversation about Mormons and Mormon backgrounds. And, you know, my mom's cousins, his dad had been, I think, raised Mormon before he married into the Clark family. And my dad's family was Mormon until they backslid. And Lauren's family is Mormon, although her
parents
were...
They're called Jack Mormons.
Backslid. And in all three cases, it was, became Mormon, backslid, became something else. Well, in Lauren's
parents' case.
No, it didn't become anything else. They became
Nothing. It was great.
Yeah.
Good times. Became Unitarian, I guess.
But this did present a nice topic for dusting off the degree.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
The weirdos.
Wah, wah.
Mormons, Adventists, and Jehovah's Witnesses.
Do you want me to keep adding sound effects? I'll keep doing it.
All three of these groups are definitely viewed by those who even know they all exist. It's amazing that Adventists have done such a good job of making themselves fit in with the mainstream that people have kind of forgotten they're there. And people who are aware of Adventists usually just think of them as... That's just the name of the hospital. And they'll just use Adventist. In Portland, people will talk about Adventist as the hospital. And, yeah, it gets kind of weird there. But anyway, so...
I'm going to start doing that. I'm going to take me to Catholic.
So there are definitely similarities between these three groups, and it's for good reason. Joseph Smith started off publishing with publishing the Book of Mormon in 1830, and he lived in Palmyra, New York. That was Western New York. William Miller, who was the founder of the Adventist movement, the Greater Adventist movement, started doing his publishing in 1832, and he grew up in Loehampton, New York, and lived in Pulteney, Vermont. James White was from Exeter, Maine. Ellen White was from Portland, Maine. And what was in common across upstate New York, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine was the Second Great Awakening in the 1820s and 30s. And that process ended up, because right before that, there, especially in New England, there was quite the move for anybody who actually cared to become a deist. That was one of the big things that actually prompted the formation of the Unitarians, was the split between the two different groups within, you know, the Congregationalists splitting out into the Congregationalists and the Unitarians. The Congregationalists continuing to be Christians, now they are very, very liberal Christians, and the Unitarians not really being Christian and
being very, very liberal about it.
It was a deist group originally, and deism was quite cool. Well, eventually people...
What does the deism stand for again?
Deism is where people believe there is a God, but he was kind of the blind watchmaker. He got everything started and then...
Oh, okay.
Stepped away.
Just let it go.
Yeah. Let it go, yep. And so all of this was happening in the same area. I've heard before that Ellen White and Joseph Smith lived only 30 miles apart. That's not true. They're about 300 miles apart. But they were all in the same cultural region of frontier New England / northeastern U.S. They were all growing up in the Second Great Awakening, and they were all swept up in it.
That area of New York was called the Burned-Over District, as I recall. Just because there was so much fucking religious revivals going on there during the Great Awakening. Just tons of shit.
Yeah. Sorry. That was specific to Western New York, where Joseph Smith grew up and got his start. And so you have these three groups. One of the things that was happening, or these two groups so far, one of the things that was happening during the Second Great Awakening was the start of the temperance movement. So both Adventists and Mormons picked that up from the temperance movement that was very popular in that part of the country right then. There is also a connection. Okay, so continuing some of these connections. So Joseph Smith's only connection is the fact that same time, same region. William Miller, he started his publishing in the 1840s. He started preaching. James White and Ellen White both went to camp meetings where he was preaching. James White became a preacher, preaching his message, William Miller's message. And then after the Great Awakening, Ellen White started having visions. Within a few months, started traveling with James White, who was one of the leading ministers among the Sabbatarian Adventists. And then, for convenience, they got married so that they could stay in the same hotel room and as they traveled. Charles Russell came along decades later, and he was influenced by the writings of William Miller. In particular, he loved the trying to predict things based on numbers in the Bible. And so that's why early Jehovah's Witnesses were very fond of making dates. They were following in the Millerite tradition, and having not been through the Great Disappointment, they didn't learn their lesson like the Adventists did. But we'll get into some more of these similarities and differences. So let's start off with the Trinity. That's kind of one of the key things that is majorly, definitely Christian. Adventists slowly became Trinitarian. They started off more or less believing that God the Father was eternal. Jesus came later, and the Holy Spirit was God's spirit, not a separate person. And by the 1880s, Adventists pretty consistently agreed that Jesus was fully God and equally God. And by about 1910, it was pretty well established within Adventism that the Holy Spirit was a separate person within the Godhead. And so by the 20th century, Adventists were Trinitarian. 19th century, they really weren't. Mormons believe that God was once a man, just like we are, and that Jesus is one of his sons. They also believe that the Holy Spirit is a separate person, and the three of them together make up the Godhead. But to be true Trinitarian, you need to believe that they are three persons, but they're at least one essence, which is theological gobbledygook. Gobbledygook. That's the word. Yeah, sorry. Getting my gibberish wrong. And Jehovah's Witnesses believe that God created Jesus, and then Jesus created everything else.
Well, that's just stupid.
And that the Holy Spirit is just God's Spirit.
Okay, that I get.
So then, okay, another thing is, are they monistic or dualistic? Meaning, do they believe that there is an immaterial soul? Adventists and Jehovah's Witnesses both reject the concept of an immaterial soul. They believe that you are you, and that the word soul describes a living human being, not something that a human being possesses, or something that possesses a human being. Mormons, on the other hand, believe that we must make many, many, many babies to house God's spirit babies. Because God's having lots of spirit babies, and they need bodies.
Constantly having spirit babies.
So
you aren't your body. Your soul just owns a meat sack.
Exactly. Yep.
So, and most Christians, and by most Christians, I mean pretty much everybody except for Adventists and Jehovah's Witnesses, believe the soul is something immaterial. That's one reason why in a lot of abortion debates, it ends up coming down to, for Christians, when does the soul enter the fetus, embryo, or zygote? And wherever they believe ensoulment happens, whenever they believe ensoulment happens, is when they believe abortion shouldn't. Life after death. This is closely tied to that, because if you have an immaterial soul, that immaterial soul is usually viewed as being completely immortal. It cannot die. So for Adventists and Jehovah's Witnesses, since there is no immaterial soul, the wicked are raised up to be judged and smited once and for all, and the righteous get eternal life. But the wicked don't get eternal punishment. They just cease to exist. They also believe that until the judgment day, those who have died are dead. They are not, they don't have spirits floating around in the heavens. They are just dead. Mormons, on the other hand, since these are God's spirit babies and they just need to come down to earth, those spirit babies can't die because they pre-existed before the body. So, of course, they're going to continue to exist after it. So the spirit baby part is what distinguishes them from conventional Christians in this regard. And they have three levels of heaven. And they don't really have a hell, but they call it the outer darkness, which is supposed to be a terrible, terrible place to go, but it's also a really good beer. Out of Utah, of course. Alcohol. Adventists and Mormons coming out of the Northeast during the rise of the temperance movement during the Second Great Awakening believe that alcohol is bad and should be avoided at all costs. Jehovah's Witnesses coming up decades later, when the temperance movement was kind of waning a little bit, don't have any prohibition on alcohol. They just think you need to be cautious with it and avoid getting drunk. Caffeine. Adventists and Mormons believe that coffee and tea are strong drinks, and that strong drinks like alcohol should be avoided. So they discourage caffeine consumption. Jehovah's Witnesses couldn't give a shit about caffeine. For diet, Adventists think that you shouldn't eat any unclean meats, per Leviticus chapter 11, and they encourage vegetarianism. Jehovah's Witnesses just want to avoid blood, so no blood products and no raw or rare meats. And by blood products, I mean like blood stews or blood sausage or anything that's made explicitly with blood. And what's interesting,
yeah, 'cause that's gross.
What's interesting with these two is they're basically taking different parts of kosher found in the same part of Leviticus. Adventists just go with what meats you're allowed to eat, and they don't care about blood, and Jehovah's Witnesses, they only care about the blood, they don't care about the kind of meat. And Mormons don't care what you eat as long as you do it in moderation. Which is a pretty common view to have across, well, just about everyone. And then, of course, healthcare is an interesting one, since most Christians don't take issue with healthcare. Adventists run a major, major healthcare organization with, I believe, hundreds of hospitals in the U.S. and even more around the rest of the world. Mormons have no issue with healthcare. And Jehovah's Witnesses refuse blood transfusions.
So, blood is icky.
Because blood is unclean. So then the question comes up is, well, are they really Christian? And a lot of this depends on what you mean by Christian. Typically, when people say that, we'll try to make that argument from within Christianity. It's those who follow at least pretty close to the Nicene Creed. And Adventists definitely are Christian, especially after their intentional stressing of their orthodoxy in the 1950s. After they cleaned up a little bit of their at least their language.
Cleaned up their act.
Yeah. They kind of cracked down on the non-Trinitarianism and made try to get people in line a little better. Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons are not Christian if you think that Christianity requires Trinitarianism. If you don't think that Christianity requires Trinitarianism, then both Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons are Christians, but they are nowhere near any of the Orthodox groups.
I've always thought of them as like Christian light, or at least Mormons are just fucking weird. They're mm-hmm. I don't really think of them as Christian, but
I used to have to break up fights in school between the Catholics and the Mormons. I was like, do you, sir, believe in Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior? Yes. Do you, sir, believe that Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior? Yes. Congratulations, you are now both Christian.
But what's interesting is when it really comes down to it, what makes people think these groups are weird doesn't really have anything to do with what they believe. It's the way they isolate themselves from everyone else. Mormons.
No, I think with the Mormons is what they believe.
Yeah,
it's pretty freaky. Yeah.
Mormons consolidated into Salt Lake in a really creepy way. They have spread out some since, but they tend to stay to themselves outside of work. Adventists tend to stay to themselves outside of work because they, in both cases, they have their own culture. And Jehovah's Witnesses actively try to shun and avoid contact with outsiders unless they are knocking on your door trying to convert you.
Yeah, it's kind of a hypocritical dick move.
And so these
the hypocritical
three groups,
dick move is they will accept birthday and Christmas presents, but they won't give them. That's the dick move.
So these groups, really, they only want to talk to you if they want to make you one of them. And that's what makes them weird. So anyway, Wesley, what do you have for us for history?
So history. Oh, goodness. What is up with that? Hey, it's
yeah,
old.
Being all in the past.
Yeah, history, it's old.
History, it. History called. It wants its history back.
Ooh. So,
meta.
This day in history. The day is August 18th, and we're starting with 1920.
Yay!
Yay! Well, let me say it first. The 19th Amendment to the United States Constitution is ratified.
Yay! No,
I'm not finished.
Too soon?
Guaranteeing too soon. Women's suffrage, a.k.a. they can vote.
Yay!
Yay! Okay, now you can share that.
Yay! Okay, I was waiting just to be sure.
Yeah, I just had to wait for the man's permission. All right, I understand.
I signaled her, released her to yay.
I wasn't basing it off that. I'm like, Wesley.
So, the 19th Amendment to the United States Constitution prohibits any United States citizen from being denied the right to vote on the basis of sex. It was ratified on August 18th, 1920. And the weird thing is that it actually took like 40 years for this shit to get put into the law to get this amendment. It's kind of weird. Anyways, until the 1910s. Huh?
Right. It took 40 years of pushing it for it to finally be ratified. Yeah.
Until the 1910s, most states disenfranchised women. The amendment was the culmination of women's suffrage movement in the United States, which effectively fought at both state and national levels to achieve the vote. It overruled the case from 1875, Minor versus Happersett, in which a unanimous United States Supreme Court decision that the 14th Amendment did not give the women the right to vote. Kind of fucking weird.
Well, that's because women were viewed under the law as being mentally deficient.
Well, I mean like...
like most men.
I mean...
That was a diss on all humanity, not just on men. Don't get all upset.
Because it wasn't until World War I that when the men were shipped off to war and women had to work and run the country, that the men that were left behind all realized, oh, yeah, women are almost as good as men. It's been the last 100 years that we've been having to try to convince them that women are as good as men, not almost.
Well, this Minor versus Happersett that I was mentioning was down in Missouri, as I recall. And, you know, she took it to the courts in Missouri, and they basically said, nah, fuck it. And then got taken to the Supreme Court with her husband, who was actually her lawyer. Kind of cool tidbit. But anyways, the Supreme Court just basically backhanded the case too and said Supreme Court readily accepted that Minor was a citizen of the United States, but it held that constitutionally protected privileges of citizenship did not include the right to vote. Holy fuck. Yeah. Hmm. So, kind of fucking weird.
What a bunch of dicks.
Pretty much. But, yeah, she was Virginia Minor, leader of the women's suffrage in Missouri.
A bag of dicks.
Somebody should eat a bag of dicks. I did twice in 2 days recently.
Were they gummies? Because those are delicious.
No, they're a bag of dicks.
And great for bachelorette parties.
So, so what's interesting is they had to argue on the 14th Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Because the 15th Amendment guaranteed the right to vote on, or didn't allow for prohibiting the right to vote based on race, color, or previous condition of servitude. The 14th Amendment could have been used to extend that to women as well, but it wasn't then.
Oh, so the wording wasn't there yet.
Because the 14th Amendment...
The wording was there. They just said that it didn't.
It wasn't real. That's not what we really meant.
I'm like, the wording was there. It's just that they didn't interpret it the way that we interpret it now.
Actually, I would say it should have been pretty obvious from Section 1. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. Right. Which I would say includes the right to vote.
I would too, but the Supreme Court at the time, back in the 1875, was referring to common law a lot too in their case. So,
now, of course, Section 2 talks about the right to vote, and explicitly says that it can't be denied to male inhabitants of such state being 21 years of age and citizens of the United States.
So, interesting tidbit on this. The 19th Amendment was first introduced in Congress in 1878 by Senator Aaron A. Sargent. 41 years later, in 1919, Congress approved the amendment and submitted it to the states for ratification. And it was ratified by the requisite number of states a year later, which was pretty damn quick, with Tennessee being the final vote needed to add the amendment.
All right.
Hooray for Tennessee being progressive way back when. Oh, boy, that gets me.
Now, of course, by that time, the entire West had granted full suffrage, including Utah and Idaho.
Yay!
Ooh, wow.
In fact, I remember something about that growing up. Idaho was like the first state to allow full suffrage or something like that.
And Wyoming Territory was first.
Oh, maybe it was Wyoming. Oh, it was Wyoming. Never mind.
Followed by Utah Territory.
I remember Wyoming also being the first to let women be
judges.
Court cases. They could be jurors.
Or jurors, yeah.
Yeah.
Washington was third.
Okay.
But they weren't states. So maybe Idaho was the first state.
No, I was thinking Wyoming.
Oh, okay. All right.
All right. So moving on along. This day in history, moving on along to the year 1963. American Civil Rights Movement leader James Meredith becomes the first black person to graduate from the University of Mississippi.
Yay!
Holy shit. Yeah. So this dude, I mean, he was kind of a badass. Civil rights movement figure, writer, political advisor, Air Force veteran. And in 1962, he became the first African-American student admitted to the segregated University of Mississippi. And, you know, he was really inspired by President JFK, John Kennedy's inaugural address, where, you know, he wanted to get black people, get everybody into all schools and help desegregate the nation.
Yay!
Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah. This guy was quite the badass, too. I mean, a few years later, I just wanted to toss this in, that Meredith actually planned a solo 220-mile march against fear from Memphis, Tennessee to Jackson, Mississippi, and he wanted to highlight continuing racism in the South and basically encourage black people to register to vote after the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And, nice. Yeah, that's pretty fucking badass. And guess what happened on the second day of his walk? That's when he was shot by a white gunman, suffered numerous wounds, and got taken to the hospital, and basically that's when all shit broke loose. And it's so badass because so many marchers, basically, like, the end of the march ended up with about 15,000 marchers. So what was just one man became 15,000, and easily 4,000 black people registered to vote. And, you know, this guy was stabbed. By the end of the march, he was actually able to go back out and, like, help, you know, be a part of the march again.
Wow. So,
you know, fucking badass.
Very nice.
Yeah. He's still kicking around. He's really fucking old now. But, yeah, so good on him for fucking getting out there.
Yeah, 83 now. That's cool that there's still some major figures from the civil rights movement that are alive.
Yeah. I wish
really
we could
cool
follow
it's
their
really
example.
Sad that, I mean, I don't want anybody to die, but it's it's really sad that it's still in people's lifetimes easily.
Yeah. And that the work isn't done.
Ooh, no.
Yeah.
Mm. So fucking A, you're a fucking hero, James Meredith.
All right, let's go ahead and take a break, and then we'll be back with news.
Atheist Nomads is proudly brought to you by Archway Hosting. Check out their low-price, full-featured hosting solutions at archwayhosting.com. That's A-R-C-H-W-A-Y hosting.com.
Hey, we're also brought to you by listeners just like you. Find out how you can become a patron at patreon.com/atheistnomads. That's patreon.com/atheistnomads.
All right. So, Wesley, do you want to take this first one?
I think I know why you said that. Yeah. My buddy, Joe Kennedy, he's back in the news. So maybe like about a year ago, you might remember a certain coach in my town of Bremerton, Washington, who liked to take a knee after every football game and pray. The coach / instructor / teacher welcomed teams, his team, the other team, all players, people from the field, and all, you know, just everybody to come down and pray with him, which was a bad. And, you know, he actually got his contract not renewed, which he calls fired, but he was just not renewed. Whatever. Fuck you.
He was actively suspended at the point that his contract expired.
That's because, you know, he stopped praying for a while at the behest of the Bremerton School District, as he should have. And then he started back up. So, yeah, he... well, broke the rules twice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one, you're not supposed to do it. Two, the school district fucking told them not to.
Yeah, but did they win any games?
they didn't do that well. They definitely didn't go to district even.
Mm.
So, yeah. Anyways, good guy though he might be, supposedly. This guy is actually a year later, almost, just as football season starts back up, is taking his case to federal court with the help of the Liberty Institute, which you might remember is a right-wing Christian group that loves to take people to court and get lots of money from donations and, you know, basically live their life in court and... yeah, they're just sucking donations again.
Yeah, lawyers.
Yeah, it's basically a group of lawyers, and this is what they do. I've been researching this also. There's a GoFundMe, essentially, on this site called classy.org, which I have never heard of up until like a week ago, where people are raising money to help Joe Kennedy. And I looked into it, and it's actually the money is going straight to Liberty Council.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, I mean, he's a fucking dickwad anyways, but now he's just getting used, and he continues to think that he has the moral and the righteous high ground. Ugh.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you said it, man. Ugh.
And I don't know why every article mentions his time as a Marine, as a veteran. They're like, is that really germane to the discussion? Not really. He filed a religious discrimination complaint with the EEO, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And, yeah, it's just... oh, God, this really just pisses me off because Bremerton School District is not rich. And... the kids that he wants to coach and wants to be a part of are going to be hurt by this. All of the kids in the school district are going to be hurt because it fucking takes money to put out, you know, lawyers to go to the fucking federal court. And sure, that school has insurance, but you know what? Those fucking premiums are going to go up too. So he broke the law. and now he's doubling down because he's got the ear of, well, he's got the support of a nation, or you know, at least a few right-wing Christian groups.
Well, and the way the Liberty Council works is they take cases like this with no chance of winning.
Yeah, losing cases, definitely.
They use taking the case as a call for funds, which they get.
Oh, yeah.
They use fighting the case as a call for funds, which they get. They use the appeal to call for funds and get them. And then when they finally lose and exhaust all other options, they use it as an opportunity to beg for, yes, more money.
Yeah, because obviously Christians are being discriminated just hand over foot now, just tons of them. And no, you just follow the fucking rules like everybody else.
The Liberty Council gets more money when they lose.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it.
It's kind of ingenious.
Even if they have to pay the school district's legal fees, they're going to net millions.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. And it really bugs me. This is just my little nit to pick. Every time you see a picture of him in the media now, he is wearing a Bremerton High School shirt, which I think is a coaching shirt. And you know what? He's not a fucking coach. Hasn't been for over a year now. And it just, I think that gives him an air of authority, really, of you know, the coach, and you know,
that's exactly
he's tied
to
the school district, but he's not an employee.
He just wants that job back.
Yeah, he wants that job back, and the basically the right to pray, which he better not. There's not a chance in hell that he'll get that.
Well, then the issue isn't the fact that he was praying. It's that he was inviting students to pray with him and was doing it publicly as a district employee at a school district event.
On company time.
On district time, yes.
Yeah. He was doing it while, like, right after the game, which, you know what, he was, call a coach and a teacher. He's a teacher. So until the last student left the property, he was still an instructor. So, I mean, this is clear cut.
Yeah, he's going to lose. And even if he were to win at the district court level, he'd be going before the Ninth Circuit. And he wouldn't stand a chance there.
So I want to say thank you, former assistant coach Kennedy, for fucking the school district over. And all the kids you say you love.
Yeah.
Go fucking work at Star of the Sea, the local Catholic school.
Yeah.
They'll be happy to let you pray.
All right. Well, Glenn Beck was recently promoting his new book, Liars, How Progressives Exploit Our Fears for Power and Control, and had his good buddy David Barton, the alleged historian who has written many books and pontificated many times in the conservative media about how the U.S. was explicitly founded as a Christian nation, which it wasn't. So let's listen to the little exchange they had.
By the way, you have your doctorate, don't you? You have your doctorate?
That's what they claim, yeah.
Okay, yeah. You have your doctorate in education.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so he's a doctor of education.
So, to clarify here, Barton has a Bachelor of Arts from Oral Roberts University and a Doctorate of Letters from Pensacola Christian College. That is an honorary doctorate, not a Doctor of Education, which is a very different degree. And you get an honorary doctorate like that for giving the commencement address. And I know how that process works since I sat in on a vote to confirm one of those when I was a student representative on the faculty senate when I was at Walla Walla.
Well, it says this guy had a chance, you know. If they said, you have a doctorate in education, or you have a doctorate, he's like, that's what they claim. But then he went ahead and said yes anyway.
It's like, yeah. He started like,
dude, you could have walked that fine line, but you lied.
He started with an evasion because he didn't want to seem less credible. And yeah, then when Beck was wrong, he was just like, okay, sure, yeah. And this was while promoting a book called Liars. Wow. And what's hilarious is it's Liars, How Progressives Exploit Our Fears for Power and Control. That is what conservatives do. The entire Republican National Convention was all about exploiting people's fears. And not even necessarily exploiting genuine fears, but in many cases, creating fears so they can exploit them. Oh, it was a book straight out of evangelism. Create the problem and then offer the solution. Ah, but man, Barton is such a fucking blowhard.
He blows harder than a humpback whale.
Ah, man. All right. Well, I think we've given him enough time. So let's go ahead and move on to another wonderful liar.
ISIS is honoring President Obama. He is the founder of ISIS. He's the founder of ISIS. And I would say the co-founder would be crooked Hillary Clinton.
Obviously.
Huh. Yeah, so let's see. Let's take a look at history here. ISIS is the modern incarnation of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which started in, what, 2005?
Yeah, but if they hadn't gone in and wiped out Al-Qaeda, then ISIS wouldn't have happened, obviously.
Well, so I think that the
I think that's what he's saying?
I think what he's saying is because Obama pulled the troops out of Iraq on the schedule that Bush had put in place, that created ISIS, which fought against Syria and then eventually got back into Iraq, where they'd originally started while Bush was president and where they were able to start due to the toppling of the fascist regime there that Bush had toppled. So if anybody created ISIS, it's Bush.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been around in one form or another since like 99, but yeah, it was essentially Bush and fucking, you know, going in. Well, you know, anyways.
Now, okay, to say that is still a gross oversimplification, but well, it is far more accurate than saying that Obama created ISIS.
I mean, fucking Obama didn't even get in to be in a senator until what, like 2006?
Well, what's funny is
it was before that.
He's doubled down on it, too. He's like, no, no, I know what I meant. I meant literally Obama is the founder of ISIS.
Yeah.
Literally. Do you not understand what that means?
Even when he was trying to backtrack his statement, he would say, and then just go right back into, yeah, he literally created it. No, the radical Islamic ideology pushed by Al-Qaeda, which was funded originally by Reagan.
Okay, Obama didn't even get into office until 2005. That's when he became the junior senator from Illinois.
Okay. So. Oh, man. Yeah, it's the fact that he can make that statement, despite the fact that it is flat out wrong, shows that he is completely incompetent about what is one of our most major, actually our most major current military engagement. You can't take over a war, despite the fact that Congress hasn't authorized it. You can't take it over if you don't even understand what's going on. Ah, fuck. And it's a really complicated one to try to figure out what's going on because it is an ugly, ugly mess. Fuck.
You can tell he's halfway through his beer because he keeps getting more frustrated.
Oh, and
but
this
it's all
next
frustrating.
Story's going to really help with that. So we spoke in depth with Linda Martin back in episode 75. You can find that at atheistnomads.com/75. Be sure to be in a mood where you can handle a very, very depressing topic because what we're about to talk about is only a tip of the iceberg, and she goes into the full detail on it. Anyway, this is about the Followers of Christ Church, faith healing, and the efforts to remove Idaho's faith healing protections, which are among the most lax in the nation. Now, a special legislative committee is reviewing those laws. They have been addressed by state welfare officials, the State Prosecuting Association, and by former and current members of the church, including Linda Martin, who told them that, and I quote, a child should not have to drown in their own fluids while people are praying over them. Mm. Yeah, yeah. Representing the church, the first time that a member of the Followers of Christ has addressed a public forum was Dan Seavey, who has a wonderful track record as a parent with three of his five children surviving to adulthood.
Oh, right up at like those 1800s folks.
Yeah, yeah, and that's you heard me right. Three of his five children, meaning two died under his care, or lack thereof. He allowed two of his children to die, and then he had the audacity to go speak before a state legislative committee. And actually, one thing that is worth noting here, this is a special legislative committee when the legislature isn't even in session. So this is actually kind of a big deal that they're doing this. They're making the time to do it when they didn't think they had the time during the actual session. And they're doing this on an election year after the session so that right after the election, they can go ahead and finish it all up. So there's actually a chance that something might happen here. But anyway, so after a state senator asked Seavey why he wouldn't use medicine, which the senator said was a gift from God, Seavey responded that, and I quote, we believe that pharmaceuticals and medicine are a product from Satan. Proof can be found in one of the lost books of Enoch. And he then went on to compare medicine to witchcraft and sorcery and said that those who take part won't be in heaven.
Oh, how convenient that that book is lost. How do they know what's in it if it's lost?
Someone found it.
And then lost it again? No, seriously. How can people claim that?
Let me, Lost Book of Enoch. Comprehensive translation. No, it's been found.
Oh, okay.
So it was referenced in the Book of Jude.
It used to be lost.
And it used to be lost, yeah. It's okay. It's lost, which is why it's not in the normal canonical Bible, and the let's see, scholars estimate that it dates to about 300 BCE. Well, the oldest parts, the newest parts probably about the first century BCE, and it's not considered as canon really by anybody except for them, apparently.
Ah.
And the Ethiopian Orthodox Tehoeto Church and Eritrean Orthodox Tehoeto Church.
Okay, so, yeah. Talk about pulling something out of their ass.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the fact that they consider that as canon would be one thing that definitely distinguishes them from mainstream Christians, and I kind of hope that the fact that they cited one of the lost books of Enoch, which most Christians, at least in the U.S., don't find as canonical, that might kind of discredit them in the eyes of Christians. because we need something so that people don't just freak out when they hear religious freedom and parental rights, as typically happens in the state. All right. Well, we are going to take another break, and then we will be back with more news. We love hearing from our listeners. You can email us at contact@atheistnomads.com, tweet us at atheistnomads, send us a message on our Facebook page at facebook.com/atheistnomads, or better yet, call us and leave us a message at 541-203-0666. We might even play it on the show. You can also help us out by leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast directory of choice. Mother Teresa is going to be canonized as a saint on September 4, and a New York Times reporter got a chance to interview the guy who collected everything to get her slated for canonization. He is the Reverend Brian Kolodichuk, a priest from Canada and a member of the Missionaries of Charity Fathers, an order established by Mother Teresa. And the reporter asked him about the miracles that confirmed that led to her canonization. And the first was a woman in India who had a tumification or swelling in her abdomen. She saw a doctor who sent her home, apparently to die. That wasn't actually clear, though, from the interview. Just that she went to the Sisters of the Missionaries of Charity and then went to a doctor, and the doctor sent her home. That's all that was actually said. Then a medal of Mary, which had been on Teresa after she died, was placed on her abdomen. A prayer was given to Mother Teresa, and then just 8 hours later, her stomach was flat and she was up cleaning at 1 o'clock in the morning. He claims that doctors were consulted, most of whom were Hindus, but none of them had an explanation for how this happened. And it's also doubtful, based on the description, that any of them had actually examined her. The second was a man with a brain infection that caused hydrocephalus. He slipped into a coma, and when the surgeon was about to release the pressure in the patient's head, he couldn't do it the way he'd planned. No explanation as to what that was meant by that, so he left. And then when he came back several hours later, the patient was awake and not in pain. Before the surgery, his family had and friends had prayed to Mary to help him. Several doctors later looked at the scans from before and after and couldn't explain this one either. So just like what we talked about in Dusting Off the Degree episode 148, a miracle is just something that isn't explained.
They prayed to Mother Teresa?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, did I say Mary? I meant Mother Teresa. Yeah. And so, yeah, both of these cases, remission happened.
Yeah. It could happen. Could have been a cyst in the first one. I mean, it's just, there's a million possibilities without actual documentation.
You know, her abdomen just all of a sudden going from being as swollen as a woman who is 6 months pregnant to flat is very unusual.
Well, it also depends on the woman. I mean, some women at 6 months can look not pregnant. It's really rare, but it still happens. But so she just a little bit of a bump.
She wasn't pregnant, though.
I understand.
Well, but no, but body types, but right, and okay, bodies can react, yeah, differently.
It's also possible you can get distended stomachs from
all kinds of
dehydration related stuff, even from infections, parasites. She was obviously gas. Yeah. She was obviously getting some kind of treatment and care. And the fact that she got better after getting treatment, that's not particularly surprising. And the detail they don't mention is, why was she cleaning? Was it because all of a sudden a bunch of fluids leaked out of her?
Gross.
Maybe she ripped a hell of a fart and she felt way better.
And with the man with the brain infection, okay, he slipped into a coma. Comas happen for one of two reasons. Either the brain is shutting down to die, or the brain is shutting down because you're so sick and that lets the immune system have an easier time fighting it off. And obviously that's what happened in this case. The surgeon was about to release the pressure in the patient's head, and my guess is if he'd gotten there to do it, there wouldn't have been any pressure to release. Which would have also been, you know, that's also an unlikely scenario. It's not common for a patient with a brain infection to all of a sudden get better. But he'd been under these doctors' care for quite a while. Doctors don't just start off with cutting holes in your head.
Well, not
anymore. Obviously, the treatments worked.
Yeah. Yay, modern medicine.
Yeah. These aren't miracles. These are medicine. And sometimes medicines work better than we expect. Ah, fuck. All right. So there is a very insular group of ultra-Orthodox Jews in the UK that is currently trying to raise £1 million sterling. And I felt the need to add sterling there just because £1 million of what? But yeah, pounds sterling to allow them to pay for the lawyers that they need to get 17 children away from the parent who left the religious community.
So they're trying to kidnap kids?
They're trying to use the courts to seize kids.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah.
And they won't get anywhere.
This is a ultra-Orthodox community. They're trying to raise money in Israel and in, you know, around the world. So they might actually get the money. But this is a community that is so insular that many of them can't speak English. They live in England.
Yeah.
Kids are growing up and they're going to, quote, school, when it's just the rabbinical schools where they get taught from the Talmud. And they don't even learn English, let alone anything else. And
that sounds like Joshy from his show way back when.
Yeah, but a little bit more extreme.
I mean, he wouldn't have gotten English unless he, like, excelled the other classes and asked for it.
Mm. Yeah, and so this group, yeah, a few parents have decided to go ahead and leave, take their kids with them, and now they're trying to get those kids back.
Shit.
Oh, that's hilarious, because that's not going to get anywhere. Not in the UK.
It might.
Well, we'll see.
That is the country where current precedent is that a atheist parent can be required under penalty of jail time to take his children to Catholic church services if they're in his custody on a weekend.
Yeah, but that's not even close to being the same as a church trying to take kids away from their parents.
On behalf of the parent that is still in the group. So they're going to be helping, say, the mother left with the kids.
Is that the case here?
Yes.
Ugh.
So they actually have a chance.
Oh, well, we'll see.
And it often works out that whoever has the most expensive lawyers wins. And if they've got £1 million to go towards this, getting lawyers for 17 child custody cases, they could get a pretty decent lawyer that way. And for our final news story, the Livets Ord Church in Sweden, which translates to the Word of Life, is planning on a project to get Bibles to people living in ISIS-controlled territory.
Hooray.
Their plan... Yeah. Their plan is to use solar-powered digital Bibles. They sound very similar. At least I'm assuming they're solar-powered. They are electronic, but they don't require any outside electricity. So I'm guessing they're solar-powered, and we have heard about these portable Arabic language solar-powered Bibles before when some group was trying to get them into Iraq a few years ago. And
Haiti, I think, a couple years ago.
Yeah. And anyway, their plan is to drop them with drones. So this is really an interesting take on the Christian warrior view of the Bible as a sword. Just now with drones.
Well, I see two really interesting things here. First, hooray for giving people something to shoot at. And, you know, target practice, because, you know, you need it.
And don't give ISIS target practice.
Yeah, I know, right? But the other thing is, hooray for giving people an item that they could be killed for.
Mm-hmm.
And I should add on that, you know what? All that money that you're spending on the fucking books, solar powered books, you could just give them like food and resources and actually like get some goodwill going. Just
do something.
I mean,
anything other than that.
You're giving them something that can actually be a death sentence.
Yeah.
Why not like give them vaccines or like food or?
Well, because these people think that they're better off dead. Anyway, unless
dead
they
if
are.
They're saved.
Yeah.
Well, you want to make the world a better place, you know, fucking
don't,
be nice.
Don't waste your money on Bibles.
Yeah. Ugh. All right. So we are going to take our last break and then we'll be back with science.
Science!
As a listener of the show, I'm going to assume you love my sexy vocal stylings. If you love the rest of the show as much as my voice, consider giving us the resources we desperately need to purchase quality cocaine and Red Bull. We make it super easy to make a one-time donation or to support us on a per-episode, monthly, or even annual basis using PayPal or Patreon. Find out more at atheistnomads.com. Use the links on the right side of the page. $1 an episode is all we ask.
All right, Lauren, what do you have for us?
All right, so we have something that is totally, totally adorable. It's Stumpy, it's purple, and it has big googly eyes. Right, it is a cephalopod that goes by the name Stubby Squid.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Snuffleupagus.
No, Stubby Squid. Oh my god, this thing is so cute. Okay, so the Nautilus is a marine exploration crew that's been exploring the Pacific coast off of California. I think I've even commented on them before. They've probably found some interesting things.
The big purple blob.
The purple blob. Yes, we love the purple blob.
And so now they got the purple...
Purple fuzzy? Stubby or squid.
Purple stubby.
The purple stubby. Typically, stubby squids are night predators that sit on the floor of the ocean floor, and then they have this mucusy jacket that kind of adheres to sand and grit, and so they roll around and get the stuff all over them, and it's perfect camouflage. So it's basically the most adorable thing ever. This one was out and about and was a deer caught in headlights sort of moment when this submarine drone comes up on it. Oh my god, but it is so cute. Okay, so there was other things to talk about, but
when she saw this yesterday, she uttered inaudible sounds. I think that it must have been driving the dogs crazy.
Yeah,
for probably a good 45 seconds before she could finally make actual
sounds
I could hear.
It's so cute. So yeah, I was squeeing quite a bit. There was some news about, aspirin use in moms causing hyperactivity in children, behavior issues.
That was Tylenol, acetaminophen.
Acetaminophen, you're right, yeah. You're right, acetaminophen. It was a terrible study, though, so I didn't just ignore it. Another theory came out about bee deaths, which is just depressing. So I just wanted to talk about the squid. Because you have to go and look at the squid. It looks like a toy. It looks like a Japanese cartoon with big googly eyes. It looks like something that a child would make for his mom on Mother's Day. It is just adorable. And I just cannot get over it. Okay, so that's science. Rocco's in trouble.
Uh-oh.
Wesley, would you like to do the feedback?
Sure. All right. Feedback. So, we got Jaded Zappa from the Twitters saying, "At Atheist Nomads, I love the science bits as well. All the sections you guys and Gal have are fun and interesting." Smiley face.
Yes. Emotive smiley face.
Also, from Jaded Zappa, and Atheist Nomads, current news, politics, science, social issues, history, and interviews. Seriously, you can't go wrong with that format.
Yay!
Thank you, Jaded.
Yeah, fucking A.
Oh, I noticed a little thing here that says no new iTunes reviews.
What's up with that?
Well, we know that there are iTunes listeners out there who haven't reviewed.
Yeah.
And if you want to keep getting stories about cute little purple octopuses, you need to review.
Cute little purple octopuses? Yeah. I hear stories about that. I'm going to give a quick rundown of our supporters.
Oh, wait. Before you do that, I do want to say Inciting Incident made a change in patronage.
Oh.
Lauren and I were on the most recent episode of Inciting Incident. So go check that out.
Yay.
Incitingincident.libsyn.com or just Google it or find the link in the show notes.
Even though we didn't talk nearly enough about movies.
No, it was a lot of it on Lauren's story and then my story and then some current events stuff.
Yeah, if you want to listen to movies and weird, stupid stuff, listen to my
Okay, we'll do that.
you guys actually had a thing to say. We just kind of bullshitted. this and all of our episodes are brought to you by listeners like Travis McGee or Russ from the Kitsap County Atheists and Agnostics, Frank, Daryl Gosson, Virginia Don, Paul Berkeley, BT Motley, George, the Flying Skeptic, Renee Davis Pelt, Mark, Mike, LaTanya, Duncan, Jaded Zappa, Alex, Will, Henry, Alan, Rachel, Bumbleclot, Inciting Incident, Peter, Heather, Sean, and Al from South Carolina. Just so you know, you can use Patreon, PayPal, or we'll fucking put a check in the mail.
We'll take it
out.
Email dustin@atheistnomads.com. I'll give you the address to send it to.
And don't forget, use that shiny little Amazon link on our page to, you know, do your purchases. You won't notice a bit of difference, but we'll get a little bit of a kickback. So appreciate it.
Yeah. And I did notice that when we did a couple weeks ago, the an extra 9 minutes for patrons.
Hmm.
A couple hours after the episode went live, we got a new patron.
No shit.
So what do you guys who are currently patrons and those of you who aren't but would consider becoming one, what do you want? Do you want extended episodes? Do you want uncut episodes? Do you want...
uncut.
I just pointed at my boobs.
That's just for me, Lauren. do you want stuff, shirts,
keychains,
mugs,
stickers,
beer glasses? Would you like opportunities
just
to...
just listing off stuff I want now.
Would you like opportunities to hang out with us on some kind of an audio or video medium where you can actually talk back at us? Let us know. What would you like to see? Our patron goals and the like are pretty stale, and we need to update that. So let us know. And also, don't forget that Light the Night is coming up, and we are raising money for it. Lauren has signed up.
Yay!
So she is going to be doing it as well. And by the time this episode is up, I will have a page set up. We'll have all the details for the live streamathon on September
24.
On September 24, you'll be able to find, and you can also find that on the event on Facebook. So check it out. It's going to be 12 hours from noon Pacific to midnight Pacific. We're going to have some awesome guests lined up. We're going to do crazy stuff like play Oregon Trail. We're going to drink a lot. We're going to eat pizza. And we're going to raise money for Light the Night. So
yay.
Look forward to that.
Charity. Okay.
All right.
Oh, so next week we will be back with an interview. Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice. And while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. Theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.
Hello.
Hey, we got Wesley back.
Yeah, you just missed the whole purple squid bit.
I totally did, but the internet
did
took
you
a shit.
At least click on the picture to see. Click show on the link it to see it.
Okay.
Oh my god, it's so cute.
Are you at Meredith's?
Yeah.
Okay, show Meredith that picture. I want to get her sound that she makes on the microphone.
Come here for a second, please.
It's so cute.
Dustin says he wants to hear the sound you make when you see this. I don't know. We're going to find out. Okay, so I'm going to click this thing.
Click it.
Cute.
Oh my god.
Is that real?
It's real. It's a real life squid.
Oh my god, it has little googly eyes.
Oh my gosh. Excuse us, our cuterus is showing.
I wish you could see my face right now. It looks really weird.
I think Dustin saw that last night when I saw this for the first time. It was just, it was like 3 minutes of me just making a high-pitched squealing noise going, oh my god, it's so cute.
I couldn't hear most of it, actually.
I can hear you now.
Yay.
It's so cute, I want it.
Well, it's off the coast of California, so you can go explore it.
I can go to California and hug it?
Yes.
Yes,
I don't hug sea creatures.
Okay.
It has a mucousy outside, so it might be a little sticky.
I'll hug it with my mind.
Virtually hug it with your camera.
There you go. There you go. Or watch it. Watch the video of it. Oh my god, it's even cuter on the video.
There's a video?
There is a video.
Scroll down.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Wes is turning on the video. Oh my god, there's a video.
Yeah, the Nautilus live, so they're constantly feeding this.
Oh, I can hear it.
He has weird eyes.
Is that a cuttlefish?
Get close.
Like the angle we are seeing it. No, don't change the angle, please.
Don't change the angle, please.
Guy, weird
I think
eyes.
It's a cuttlefish.
It's an octopus.
Is it?
Yeah, it looks like the body looks like...
Now, a quick note, these people that are talking, they're mostly geologists. They are not biologists.
Are these the same folks that had their video of the weird creature that they found?
The purple blob!
Oh my god.
That is so cute.
They look so fake.
It really looks
so fake. Some other Aerobee team just came before and just left it here.
It's like someone who can drop their toy.
Sorry for the dogs there.
Okay. Is the dog excited about the little squid too?
Great photo. Oh no, they heard somebody's car door.
I want to see him move.
I thought the dog was getting excited about the adorable squid.
But I love the people who are commenting on the video. They are just as excited.
I think this is a good spot to watch.
He's all crazy.
Just stay here.
Okay, I think we should probably go back to the show.
Back to the podcast. I'll give Wes the headphones back.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye. So anyway, that's the googly squid. And our dogs are going mad.